190. There is something in Plato's morality which does not really belong to Plato, but is found in his philosophy, one might say, only in spite of Plato, namely the Socratism for which Plato was essentially too noble. No one will do harm to himself. Thus, everything bad happens unwillingly. For the bad man inflicts damage on himself. He would not do that if he knew that bad is bad. Thus, the bad man is bad only from error. If we take his error away from him, we necessarily make him good. This sort of conclusion stinks of the rabble, which sees in bad actions only the wretched consequences, and really makes the judgment it is stupid to act badly, while good, it assumes without further thought, is identical to useful and agreeable. So far as every utilitarianism of morality is concerned, we may guess from the start it had the same origin, and follow our noses. We will seldom go wrong. Plato did everything to interpret something subtle and noble in the principle of his teacher, above all, himself. Plato, the most daring of all interpreters, took all of Socrates only like a popular tune and folk song from the alleys, in order to vary it into something infinite and impossible, that is, into all his own masks and multiplicities. To speak in jest, and one based on Homer, what is the Platonic Socrates, if not proste Platon, opithen te Platon, messi te chimera? Plato in front, Plato behind, and in the middle, the chimera. 191. The old theological problem of believing and knowing, or to put the matter more clearly, of instinct and reason, and thus the question whether in assessing the value of things instinct deserves more authority than rationality, which wants to assess and act according to reasons, according to a why, according to expediency and utility, it is always still that old moral problem, as it first appeared in the person of Socrates, which had already divided our minds long before Christianity. Socrates, in fact, set himself with a taste for his talent, which was that of a superior dialectical thinker, at first on the side of reason, and, in truth, what did he do his whole life long but laugh at the awkward inability of his noble Athenians, who were men of instinct, like all noble men, and who could never provide enough information about the reasons for their actions. Finally, however, in stillness and secret, he also laughed at himself. With his more subtle conscience and self-inquiry, he found in himself the same difficulty and inability. But he said to himself, does that mean releasing oneself from instincts? We must give the instincts and reason the proper help. We must follow the instincts, but convince reason to assist in the process with good reasons. This was the real falsehood of that great ironist so rich in secrets. He brought his conscience to the point where it was satisfied with the kind of trick played on itself. Socrates basically had seen through the irrational, immoral judgments. Plato, who was more innocent in such things, and without the mischievousness of a common man, wanted to use all his power, the greatest power which a philosopher up to that time had had at his command, to prove that reason and instinct inherently move to a single goal, to the good, to God. And since Plato, all the theologians and philosophers have been on the same road. That is, in things concerning morality up to now, instinct, or as the Christians call it, faith, or as I call it, the herd, has triumphed. We must grant that Descartes is an exception, the father of rationalism, and thus the grandfather of the revolution, a man who conferred sole authority on reason. But reason is only a tool, and Descartes was superficial. 192. Anyone who has followed the history of a particular science finds in its development a textbook case for understanding the oldest and commonest events in all knowing and perceiving. There, as here, the rash hypotheses, the fabrications, the good, stupid will to believe, the lack of suspicion and of patience, develop first of all. Our senses learn late, and never learn completely, to be subtle, true, and cautious organs of perception. With a given stimulus, our eye finds it more comfortable to produce once more an image which has already been produced frequently than to capture something different and new in an impression. To do the latter requires more power, more morality. To listen to something new is embarrassing and hard on our ears. We hear strange music badly. When we hear some different language, we spontaneously try to reshape the sounds we hear into words which sound more familiar and native to us. That's how, for example, in earlier times, when the German heard the word arkubalista, he changed it into Armbrust. Arkubalista, Armbrust, crossbow. Something new finds our senses hostile and reluctant, and in general, even with the simplest perceptual processes, the emotions like fear, love, hate, including the passive feeling of idleness, are in control. Just as a reader nowadays hardly reads all the individual words, let alone the syllables on a page, he's much more likely to take about 5 words out of 20 at random and guess on the basis of these 5 words the presumed sense they contain. So we hardly look at a tree precisely and completely, considering the leaves, branches, colour and shape. We find it so very much easier to imagine an approximation of the tree. Even in the midst of the most peculiar experiences, we still act in the same way. We make up the greatest part of experience for ourselves and are hardly ever compelled not to look upon any event as inventors. What all this adds up to is that basically, from time immemorial, we have been accustomed to lie. Or to express the matter more virtuously and hypocritically, in short, more pleasantly, we are much more the artist than we realize. In a lively conversation, I often see in front of me the face of the person with whom I am speaking so clearly and subtly determined, according to the idea which he expresses, or which I think I have brought out in him, that this degree of clarity far exceeds the power of my ability to see. Thus the delicacy of the play of muscles and of the expression in his eyes must be something I have made up out of my own head. The person probably had a totally different expression, or none at all.